All right, today's show, we talk house case like fifth graders, get into Brian Kelly and buy-in players. Is there a reason to panic in recruiting for certain schools, or am I just being ridiculous? And what happens when the psychedelics kick in? And we're not talking about the gin and juice bowl.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Martha Stewart did more time than him.
Ross Gellinger.
I was throwing up in my mouth.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I find it hilarious that Will Wade University now is suddenly like above the fray.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod and in our ongoing series of Talk to Me About the House Case Like I'm a Fifth Grader. Because of my stellar academic career at Sparrow Elementary School, I feel particularly capable of this. We have the latest Ross Dellinger report. And to make it very, very simple, we are going to just talk about this part of the house case. At some point, they are going to have to revenue share the schools / NCAA and the athletes. They're not going to be able to outsource it to their boosters via collectives, although I think that would be ideal, but they don't like that anyway. They're being forced kind of into a settlement because they may owe like $5 billion to some athletes. They're fearful of a lawsuit because even if they win initially, this thing being a federal suit will end up at the Supreme Court and they'll probably get trounced. Ergo, they are coming out and saying things like, well, we're going to have this plan and this plan and this plan, including about 20% of a college athletic department's revenue being available to be shared with the student athletes, or at least the revenue from TV, tickets, and postseason, things like that, not donations. As we have raised the question of, this is a great idea for the schools, but you're supposed to negotiate these things, otherwise it's called wage fixing, and you're not allowed to do that. There's a law. Everybody in the industry cannot get together and determine what everyone, all the workers
collusion.
Are paid. Yes, it's called collusion. It is a pretty simple legal concept. But hey, why not try it?
But is it different, Dan, in settlement negotiations over a lawsuit?
That's great. Maybe. But going forward, what is the plan? Yeah. We're talking about a poor track record from these guys.
Is 20% just one side's idea? Is this the college establishment's number? And does Kessler and company have a different number?
Kessler and company did have a different number for sure. But let's break it down. And I kind of broke down the numbers and without getting too much in the weeds. First, let's try to identify the revenue streams that are compiled to get an average to determine the cap, the revenue cap, the high end that schools are going to be able to share with athletes. Dan mentioned it, right? The big ones are the television contracts, the ticket sales, sponsorship and licensing, game day sales. Those are kind of the four main revenue streams within a Power Four athletic department. And so you combine all of them, and I did in a fancy-spancy spreadsheet, took a few days, but it produces a number of $4.7 billion with a B. And then, of course, you're going to divide that by, and this is just public schools, Power Four public schools, because those are the only ones that produced information. Obviously, privates, you can't get that information. So it's $4.7 billion divided by the 55 Power public schools is $85.2 million. So the average Power 4 school number that you need to keep in your head is $85.2 million. 22% of that's the agreed-upon, at least right now, settlement arrangement that athletes will get 22% of that $85 million, that average. And that comes out to about $19 to $20 million a year, which has been what's been reported with the revenue cap will start at And that's key here. We can get to that later, but we'll start at 19, 20, 21 million, somewhere in that span. Now, Dan mentioned, you know, and Pat mentioned, you know, the plaintiff's number. If, you know, how did they get that, the 22%? Well, I crunched some of those numbers too. When you add in things like scholarships, 15 million per school in scholarship expenses. And then you take things like dining, equipment, you know, player equipment, medical expenses, and you do, you get a number that, along with the rev share, totals about, guess what, 50%. And so you kind of figure out how they got there. They almost certainly got there by including scholarships and other athlete-only kind of resources in a department. And you do get to a number that's around 40 to 45 million for athletes per school. And that's about half of 85 million in these revenue generation. So that's kind of the gist of, I think, how they got there when you run the numbers.
Okay. So they're saying they got it. Even, and this is what comes up in the in your story, Romogi Huma, longtime head of the College Football Players Association, or National College Players Association, I'm sorry, not the football players, does everything, said 50%. Look at the pro models, players get 50%. Anything less than what's fair will continue to be problematic. The numbers matter. The others are talking, other people in the story talking about how you got to negotiate. So this is where the details, and why does this matter? A, how many schools can afford this? And B, how the heck do athletic departments afford this if the number is 22%, if the accounting calls for 50%, but it's 50% of revenue goes directly to the players, or does it count when you're talking about, hey, we're feeding you, we've got medical, we've got debt service on our buildings, things like that. How is the devil is going to be in the details here? Because if you look at, and there's a difference between all revenue and football-related revenue, or like tickets and contracts. The NFL's deal, their CBA, calls for 48% to go to the players, and it's all revenue, all football revenue. Now, that is defined in a million different ways, but what you basically are getting, everything that someone's bringing in via the NFL, if you're, you know, whatever, you own the team, you own the stadium, Robert Kraft owns Gillette Stadium, you don't get the money if he has Taylor Swift come in the summer, right? That's separate. But they're getting that 48%, and they're not paying for the locker room, the trainers, the travel, all those things. So the devil here is going to be in the details, because there are millions of dollars will swing in the balance. And when we're talking about how many athletic teams you can maintain, whether schools are willing to cut back on football, give up on the dream of playing major college football, whether there is a super league and stuff like that. This is important. And I know it's you know, again, we're in the weeds of accounting, but this is this type of stuff that's going to force decisions by schools of what they're going to be about, because you're talking tens of millions of dollars based on how this negotiation, settlement, lawsuit, how all of that accounting can be done. Because you could very easily come to them and say, hey, look, you're saying you guys only made $100 million on your athletic department, but you're not counting the, we talked about donations, you know, the $29 million you got in donations for your athletic department, or you're not counting. What's the deal here? And you're coming back saying, hey, look, man, we're giving you free education, we're giving you tuition, which is absolutely compensation. Players have always been compensated. They just want the direct cash now. You also have a matter of motivation. This current deal is the greatest thing that'll ever happen to the players. Like, no player should ever want the current system to ever go away. You're a free agent every year, unlimited salary cap, just go for it. So where do we go with this? Pat, how important is this going, and what do you see at this early stage of that gap that I think will have huge ramifications for college athletics, is why we're talking about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This is going to be the details are not small details. They're significant and how they are finally sussed out to the quote-unquote advantage of the players or the advantage of the schools is going to be vital in terms of what this, what everything looks like, what the size of an athletic department looks like, even conference memberships, those sorts of things. How much can you afford? How deeply can you go into this system? How close can you get to paying a cap for different places? It's all going to kind of, I think, help further winnow down who's playing at the highest level and who isn't, who's fully invested and who isn't. And, yeah, there's so much still that's unknown about this and what's going to be accepted by the plaintiffs in this in terms of a settlement and what's not, and then where how high does that number get pushed beyond this early stage of this. So there's a whole lot still that has to be determined here. And it is, if I were involved, I think you can see, like looking at Texas A&M, and they're saying that's why they're, you know, they're starting to batten down hatches, looking at staff sizes and that sort of thing. Everybody's going to be doing that, I think, in anticipation of how big these numbers could go and how much they can afford.
Dan mentioned one big revenue stream that's not included to get the average, and that's donations. Donations are responsible for the largest revenue stream in pretty much most athletic departments.
It's amazing they forgot that one on the balance sheet.
Well, it's all a compromise, yeah. Man. You could
what
tell,
was the
you
logic when, used in excluding that?
I mean, well, we tried.
I don't know.
We tried, but yeah, we noticed.
Well, when you really dig in the numbers, you can see the compromises, right, that were made on each side. I think from the college side, it's you got to count scholarships toward this number, right, to get to the maybe the fifth closer to the 50%, like we discussed earlier. From the college side, they would say you can't include donations because they're not something annually you can count on a specific amount, I guess. They're not a commercially generated revenue, is how it's been said to me. The revenue streams that were counted toward getting the cap number were just commercially generated that involved college athletes. They're saying for whatever reason during compromising they got to the donation they got donations exempt. The other thing college side got is Alston payments, which range from usually around $2 to $3 million annually for a power four school, included, counting toward the revenue share number, at least for now. All of this is evolving, but at least for now, they got that counted toward the rev share. So really, right, you got to shave $2 to $3 million off of that rev share. But that's kind of made up in the back damages, right? They're going to have $2 to $3 million per school given to the back damages, back pay as well. But you can see the jostling that happened over the last 8 months. They've been negotiating for 8 months. You can see when you dig into the numbers back and forth how they traded different compromises. One thing I want to note that was kind of, the real significant new item in the story is that this cap will rise potentially significantly over the 10-year settlement. There's a look-in provision that, at least for now, the discussion is every third year there'll be a look-in to reevaluate the cap based on the increasing in new revenues. For instance, the SEC and Big Ten's new television deal in new CFP money. Each SEC and Big Ten school by 2026, right, we'll probably see an increase of at minimum $20, $25 million each based on new TV deal in CFP money. So all of that's going to be factored in some folks in the Big Ten and SEC tell me they're expecting that cap somewhere along the line of that 10 years when that look-in happens to be more like $25 million. That's an interesting piece, and certainly one. Look, there are plenty of Power Four schools that probably can't get to 20 million, let alone 25. Now, their revenues will be increasing as well. But Dan, you know, you started the show asking that question. How many schools can afford this? How many schools can afford to get to the cap? It is an interesting question. I was out in Phoenix at the Fiesta meetings, the annual Fiesta meetings. I asked probably about 8 to 10 administrators just in the hallway, how many schools do you think can get to that point? Wide range of answers, from as many as 50 of the 70 Power Four to as little as 20 Power Four schools could get to that number. So it's probably somewhere in the middle, maybe 30 to 40 of the 70 Power Four schools can get to that cap number.
So out of that cap, correct me if I'm wrong, Ross, we believe that the schools will be able to distribute this money as they see fit individually amongst their athletes?
That is certainly a good question, and that is what's believed to be the case. Obviously, Title IX looms as an issue for some, right? The question is, how does Title IX apply to a revenue-sharing model? We've only seen Title IX applied to things like benefits in the way of athlete dining and room and board and scholarship and all that stuff. How does it apply to revenue sharing? People within college athletics believe that the Title IX language specifies that. And for those who don't know what Title IX is, I'm sure most do listening to this, but those who don't, it's a federal law that requires educational institutions that receive public money to provide equal opportunities for women athletes and men athletes and women students in general and men students. And so how is Title IX applied? Does a school have to distribute the revenue share in equal compensation for women and men? Or can a school just satisfy Title IX by distributing the revenue share in equal opportunities, the number of men and women athletes who receive money and not the compensation? Those within college athletics say it's the equal opportunities and not the compensation. Those in the Title IX space, and lawyers in the Title IX space, say differently. I think what the bottom line is going to be, where we're going to find this answer, is eventually in a lawsuit.
There's already an Oregon Beach volleyball lawsuit.
That's right.
That doesn't deal specifically with revenue, I don't believe, but
it may be included at some point. Yeah, and it may give us an idea. Charlie Baker actually said that publicly in January. That case may give us an idea of going forward of Title IX's implications to any revenue share model.
How this plays out again will be. I mean, look. They're going to have to find a way to pay a lot of money directly to these athletes. They also are, in many places, having increased revenue. Not all of them. That's kind of your issue. But I think their advantage of the schools is that the players are going to be probably forever disorganized. And they can't even have a union. Like, there's so many laws. It's a very tricky thing, and we've discussed this before, but if you can't strike, you don't really have any power as a labor group, and they're never going to get a strike. It's hard to go to a small town in Ohio with a General Motors plant, and all the workers live in the same neighborhoods, and their kids play Little League together, and they go to church together, and they hang out together, and all of them basically have the same situation. And to get them to say, let's strike because we'll get better health care and $5 more an hour, it's hard to get them to strike. And it's basically a very, like-minded group, because someone's still sitting there going, I can't afford it. I got a boat payment, whatever their thing is. I don't like striking. It's hard to get that group. This, you'll never get college athletes. So a lot of this is going to be court. A lot of it's going to be major politics. I mean, we already hear, why is Caitlin Clark not paid the same as Victor Wembanyama? It becomes this big. It's like, all right, really? We can't figure that out. It's a lot of disingenuous arguments going on out there, whether we want to wave a magic wand or not and make it so, fine. But that's, you know, this is going to get really, really wild. And for those of us that I think would have always loved college athletics, there's a lot that can be lost in these decisions that don't seem like, I think everyone's like, hey, figure it out. Give the athletes some money. It's sort of like saying, hey, figure it out. Caitlin Clark should get to say, well, figuring it out requires an awful lot of work here. So where are we going with this? I don't know, but these are why these details are important. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, to your point, Greg Sankey is fond of saying this, and he's right. Beware of simple solutions, because the complex issues do not have simple solutions.
No.
So you can't just say, well, do it this way or do it that way.
I thought this could be solved on Twitter. I thought this was just a couple politicians weigh in and we're good, right?
There you go. Yeah, good to go. The other thing, though, is as you pointed out, though, like where the athletes have it right now, where there's no regulation and no transparency about who's getting what and no curbs on where you can go and no binding contracts, they're in the sweet spot at the moment. It's not going to last, I don't think, because people don't want it to last and probably shouldn't want it to last. But what's coming will put more money probably in more athletes' pockets, but it also will inhibit a lot of what they're enjoying at this very moment.
Yeah, there's a quote in my story from a couple of player association kind of leaders, Jason Stahl of the College Football Players Association, Jim Cavall of the athletes.org, formerly the influencer CEO. I thought Jim had a great quote talking about athletes in why right now it's difficult to get them together to unionize or at least form an association to bargain because they are receiving more benefits now in this environment than they ever have. It's unrestricted player movement, booster-fueled payments that are somewhat unregulated. And then this is his quote, they have not united as a group. To unite as a group takes some initiative and action. You need passion, and that passion has to come from a place of pain. College athletes aren't feeling pain right now. They are free agents every year and can get $600,000 for playing DB by moving from one school to another and get an apartment in a car. So that is part of the problem, why associations are having a difficulty. Yeah, and Jim is one of those, and he brought, I thought, a good point up. You know, guys, whenever this settlement is finalized, which they want to do it within the month, there is kind of a deadline. That's why really this has become a big thing the last few weeks, is because plaintiffs' attorneys kind of gave them a deadline. Now, deadlines can always move and shift around, but they want to do it by the end of the month, certainly at some point this summer. And so when it's finalized, between the time it's finalized and the time a new model starts, could be a year, could be 14 months or so. During that time, Jim and others for the player associations, they want collective bargaining to happen during that time. They think that's when it should happen. College athletic leaders would say, we are bargaining right now at the table with plaintiff's attorneys who represent the athletes, represent a class action, a class certification of athletes. So it's an interesting back and forth we're seeing playing out. But the bottom line is athletes have it good enough right now. They're not getting together.
This is why I always thought that college sports, if this was possible, should have fought for years to set themselves up either through legislation or whatever, as we provide a platform for you. It's much like the Olympics. The IOC does not pay anybody to be at the Olympics. They provide it. They make, you think the NCAA makes money? Good Lord. The IOC offers up this platform. You come here and you make money. Because there are no aggrieved parties anymore. Not really. Okay? The ones that really make, who are really worth a lot, are getting paid a lot now. And the ones who are secondary players, backup characters, ones are just happy to be there. The kid that worked their whole life to be able to be a swimmer or a field hockey player somewhere, and they got 1 year to start on their team, and this is what they want to do. They probably already come from a family. They're not living in a car or anything like that anyway. Those like Caitlin Clark got screwed last year, right? Caitlin Clark made so much money for the University of Iowa that she should have got a share. I don't think one person could possibly say Caitlin Clark didn't deserve some money. Guess what? She didn't even take their own collective money because she was making so much money on her own. So it's hard to make it so Caitlin Clark is really a simple, like, yes, she should have been. I mean, without Caitlin Clark, Iowa basketball is this. With Caitlin Clark, it's this. Everyone made money off, but so didn't she. So she's not that upset about it because she's in the State Farm commercial. That level of superstar gets their money. Those are the ones that really have the case. The other ones are like, well, you know, hey, I'm the eighth player on the Iowa women's basketball team. Look, we sold out. Well, you know, you also got to be the eighth player on the Iowa women's basketball team. So they're never going to organize. And this is where I think the schools have the advantage. And I don't blame them for striking and trying to get, hey, donations. What?
What? You forgot to put that line item down. Yeah.
Ah, you don't even know. We might like, okay, what did A&M got? $115 million last year. It could be zero. It could be. But yeah.
No.
So I don't blame them because I don't think the players will ever get their crap together. And nor why would they?
Right. No, this is not the days of like, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago when athletes were getting nothing beyond scholarships unless it was under the table.
Yeah, we'll get a stipend, right?
I mean, yeah, they weren't right. Even, no, you know. The current situation is definitely first world problems, right? I mean, not saying they don't deserve more, but this is not a situation of, you know, complete and total inequality.
Speaking of paying players, LSU coach Brian Kelly had some thoughts. It's tough out there being a college football coach in this like 52-week-a-year media coverage. Concern at LSU that the Tigers did not do well in the spring transfer portal addressing defensive needs. We're down to some more minor stuff, right? Used to be like, how's the team look, coach? You know, twins, like, you'd have a problem if you lost a game you should have won, not why didn't we get these three guys out of the portal? But here we are. And so there's some consternation that LSU has not done enough to address its defensive needs. Obviously, they had Jaden Daniels, incredible. I mean, they had a great offense last year and couldn't get it going because the defense was so bad. LSU targeted three major defensive players, is according to some of the LSU websites. One went to Oklahoma, one went to Miami, and one went to Alabama. I'm not even going to say their names to try to, because Brian Kelly's implying that that they were bought, which I don't even know how this is I don't even know where we're at here in college sports.
Well, Dan, everybody's buying. Some people are just buying at a higher rate.
Why is it called buying? Like, if your favorite team signs a player in free agency, you'll go, oh, we just went out and bought. Like,
yeah, they okay. do. We talk. That's what
well,
we always said about the Yankees.
Yeah.
We said that about the Yankees.
All right.
20
I
years.
Guess they
yeah,
do.
Yeah, they
I
do.
I mean,
Come
I don't
on,
think
Dan.
That the Boston Bruins are buying David Pastrnak. I'm just glad we got him. I don't care how much they're paying him. We got a cap. You got a wager the stuff. But, you know, all right. Anyway, they don't get their guys. Brian Kelly gets goes on a WAFB sit-down interview, and he talks extensively, but these are the quotes that got going. I didn't think were too bad, but people got pretty fired. I think I made it pretty clear in a number of press conferences that I had that we were in the market in recruiting and the transfer portal looking for defensive linemen. It hasn't fared very well, quite frankly, because we're selling something a little bit differently. And that is, we want to recruit, we want to engage, build relationships, we want to develop, retain, and have success. We're not in the market of buying players, and unfortunately right now, that's what some guys are looking for. They want to be bought. And I understand NIL is a part of it, and we have an incredible collective, and we have very, very generous opportunities around Greater Baton Rouge area for NIL opportunities. So they are here, but we are not going to go out and buy players. That's not what this is about. This was never about that. We will develop you. We'll get you ready for the next step. But if you're looking, just looking to get paid, you're looking in the wrong place. If you like all the things we do here, go on and go. But if you just want to get paid, this is not the place for you. Again, paid is this. Okay, hey, I got two job opportunities. Really, which one should you take? The one that's paying me more. No kidding. Really, Jimmy? Great thinking. If you take the one that pays you less, if you have two job opportunities, I'm going to take less money because I don't want to be bought. Your friends will be like, excuse me? Better be one heck of an equity opportunity going forward or something. Anyway, this is where we're at. Anyone outraged by Brian? Because some people are outraged.
I find it hilarious that Will Wade University now is suddenly like above the fray.
Strong ass. We've come a long way from strong ass offer now.
How did I guess that Pat Forty would bring up Will Wade in this conversation? Yeah, I forgot. Shocking.
We make mild ass offers now at LSU, and sometimes we might be outbid, and it's just a darn shame. But we're above the fray here.
Our strong ass offer is personal development.
Yeah, yeah. There we go. Brian needs to rinse the Notre Dame out of himself here and get with the program in the SEC. Come on. Everyone is buying players. Are they not? Come on.
Yeah. I mean, except some G5 schools that have $100,000 in their collective. But other than that, yes.
They somehow signed the number one quarterback. They got a commitment for the number one quarterback in the country in the middle of his junior year from Michigan. I guess Ohio State and Michigan never noticed him.
I think what's happening, there are two things happening here. And you hear this a lot from coaches around college athletics when it comes to NIL. And it's that they do truly want at least a portion of the recruitment in the signing of a player to be about more than money. They do. They want it to be about the culture and the building and the on-campus life and the history of the program, all that stuff, right? So I think part of that is true. Then there's this other part, right, where there's a transaction happening, and everybody, me included, probably you guys in a way, is in different parts of our life. It's hard to accept change sometimes. And I think coaches are in the middle of a transformative time in college athletics where change is happening at an insane rate and everybody's having a hard time accepting change. So while they want to balance this and still have a part of the recruitment, all these other things over here is a transaction. And if you have too many, I think coaches believe, if you have too many players in your building where the recruitment is solely about a transaction, then your building and your locker room may not be the best place. And may be an uncomfortable place for coaches at times. So everybody's just going to have to get used to that. And there's these melding of these two things now in recruitment that I think makes it awkward, complicated. Maybe some would even say very difficult on coaches, and nobody's going to feel sorry for people making 3, 5, 4, like Brian Kelly, $10 million. A year, but there is that change happening right now, and I think it's a difficult situation for some.
No doubt. I mean, but it's not that coaches don't want to have relationship-based recruiting and to have culture in the locker room, you know, team first and all that sort of thing. I get that for sure. But getting players is also the bottom line, and the way you're getting players right now is by whipping out the cash. And, you know, I think I'm going to guess, not all, but most coaches are going to say, you know what, we'll whip it out and we'll try to build the culture after we get them here, as opposed to, no, we're not going to pay them, and we'll just try to win with substandard athletes. Coaches, especially, you get Brian Kelly's age, and that is the way you have done things for 40 years. And all of a sudden now, to Ross's point, yes, you've got to try to do things very differently, but this is the way of the world, man. I mean, you know what? Nick Saban did some work getting some players in via NIL. I'm not saying they were bought, but they realized they had to make some transactional decisions, I think, in terms of bringing in some of the guys that they brought in the last couple of years. He was in his 70s. You got to adapt.
Tried to buy that kid from Toledo. Said, heck no, they ain't leaving the Glass
City.
Yeah,
he turned down money, Dan. How about that? Look at that.
Okay, I got
he turned down more money.
I have a couple divergent thoughts on this. A, I totally get what Brian Kelly is trying to say. I really do. And I don't think this was as like outrageous as maybe the reaction. And I encourage, we talked about this last time. I tried to read a lot of the quote. If you listen to his whole thing, it's much more nuanced than what was flashing around the internet, which was basically one quote. We don't want to pay players, right? Or we don't want to buy players, right? Which gets everyone going, as we talked about in the last episode. So I think what Brian Kelly is saying is what every coach, what every organization, all right, including the pros, no organization in free agency buys what is a player that they don't think will fit into their team. And that team is they all have cultures, right? The Miami Heat have a culture, the Patriot way, whatever, this stuff's garbage or not. They all think they do. Kyrie Irving is one of the greatest basketball players I've ever seen. You want him signed to your favorite team right now? No, most people will not, because it doesn't work. James Harden, Ben Simmons, like there's all sorts of guys you can sign and you go, well, he doesn't really fit in I'd rather have a guy who's completely committed. This is my organization. Everyone's trying to build that team. So I totally get it. My problem with what Brian is saying is the implication that the players, and that's why I don't want to say their names, and I'm going to try to be better at not saying, letting some of the negativity that gets put on these kids or these guys to be attached to their name. That's my goal this year. But to pretend, oh, he only went to Oklahoma, he only went to Alabama, he only went here because he just wanted to be bought. Maybe he wanted the most money and he's completely dedicated to trying to improve. And that implication, there's some moral failing in this player because they just want to be bought, just because they didn't buy what Brian Kelly was selling in terms of culture, but they did buy what Brent Venables was selling or what Kalen DeBoer was selling or whatever. Or, hey, to use a different, I just want to stay at Toledo. I don't want to be bought, right? There is no moral, ethical ranking system here. If someone says, I want the most money and I'm going to give it all, because you can also look and say, you can look at in pro sports and go, hey, that guy's making $45 million. He's also just dove into the third row of a trying to get a loose ball.
Part of with something that's happening across college football and basketball, specifically when it comes to recruitment and NIL, is the new players in a locker room, whether they're recruits at a high school or transfers, are getting more, right? Sometimes significantly more than the players who have been on that team for years. And it's been a real problem with coaches and with locker room atmosphere and environment and all that stuff. And what's fascinating, to get back, tie this all together with the House case and something Pat mentioned earlier, is how the money is distributed to athletes, how a school distributes the money to athletes. I think you're going to find that most coaches want to distribute the money kind of sort of like the NFL, where you do have a freshman, right, type limit, and you tier the payments and you get more. It escalates as you spend more and more time on the team, with considerations for how you do probably on the field. But what's happening right now is payments at many places aren't tiered, right, in their gear toward recruiting players out of high school or the portal, and why you see, I think, so many players dip their toe in the portal to get more money at a, obviously at another school, and they enter that team as a, say, a sophomore or something, and they're getting three times as much as a senior who started 12 games last year. That's going to be interesting to see in 2 years from now, right, when this new model arrives, how teams distribute money, and will they do it not maybe colluding with one another, but will they wink, wink, do it on a similar scale?
Welcome to the American workforce. I mean, that happens at every business.
But Dan, look at the NFL. It's a good model for how
it is a good model.
Pay structure maybe should be, right?
I mean, a rookie pay scale makes sense.
It makes sense. It was out of control. I get it.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to, they didn't do that for the locker room. They did that because organizations were getting high draft picks and they became a burden. Because you have the number, like, look at this NBA draft this year, right? There's nobody in the thing. Last year, you'd be sitting there saying, all right, we got to pay Wembanyama $40 million a year, or 25, like, we got to pay him, we'll do it. This year, it might be Wembanyama, like, the number one draft pick in the NBA might be Wembanyama's, like, backup. Like, it was like, this, now you're stuck. So you had to give Sam Bradford some outrageous sum of money. That's why they did it. The locker room is going to be the locker room. You know, you got to deal with it. But a rookie salary scale, it's fine. If you get the players to agree to it, the easiest thing to do to negotiate with the union is to have the guys in it screw over the guys who aren't yet in it, right? They're all going to be like, yeah, sure, don't pay the new guy. I'll get more of the money. It's a cultural change. Brian Kelly, I think, as he is wont to do, tends to be a little clumsy sometimes in his verbiage.
He was probably, what more he was trying to say, right, was that probably some, again, what I just said, right, some of the new guys on a team because of through the transfer portal and the recruitment out of high school are getting so much more than those that have been on a team for years. And he's probably, I'm sure that's what he's getting at, is that, no, we're not going to pay, you know, I'm just throwing out $700,000 for a defensive lineman to join our team when our current defensive lineman or our current offensive line quarterback receiver is making $200,000. I think that's probably what he's getting at.
Right. Or it just ran out of money because they spent it on somebody else.
Well, there's that too. He does get paid $10
million. Never too early to talk recruiting. I thought this was an interesting story in Mike Farrell, sports.com, longtime talent evaluator, Rivals and stuff. He has a story here by Mike Lilly. Four schools that are not recruiting well yet. Four teams with reason to panic in the 2025 recruiting cycle. And their entry. One is Colorado, which is just not participating. They have three commits.
Yes.
Coach Prime can't get good players out of high school like Travis Hunter. That's not possible. Anyway, they're not participating, so they're on the list. But the other three are participating, and is there concern? Okay? And I'm going to start with the biggest one, Michigan. Michigan has just five recruits right now. They have just 2 4-stars. They just got a in-state offensive lineman. Sharon Moore is a new coach. But they just won the national title. They've been to the playoff 3 consecutive years. It's Michigan. Pretty good. They got recruits when they weren't winning. They only have 5 guys. Some more are rumored to be coming soon, and this is early in this stage. But right now they have they're not rolling in it. They have they're ranked, I think, 8th. In the they're 38th overall in the country and 8th in the Big Ten right now, which of course has 18 teams. Pat, should there be concern on why Sharon Moore is not yet attracting what would seem to be at least an average, you know, just a normal amount of like decent players who would want to play at the University of Michigan in the biggest stadium and a world-class academics and a winning program and all of that?
Too early to worry. It's May, and we're talking about the 2025 class. And going back, you know, having looked at these rankings for many years, a lot of times at this point in time, Georgia and Alabama aren't doing that much. And lo and behold, they always do. Now we'll see with Alabama in the post-Saban era. But if you're being more selective and you're looking more at a few high-end guys and then you're going to backfill around them as opposed to, hey, we're going to go take a dozen three-stars right now, this is often the way it happens. So we'll see. I mean, if we're still in this situation in August or September, okay, then it's a more real conversation, in my opinion. But for now, I would not be hitting the panic button on May the 8th.
Yeah, we don't need this kind of perspective and patience, Pat. This is the damn podcast.
All right, Dan, panic, Michigan.
Yeah.
Panic now.
Push the button now. Freak out.
All right.
Just go to the Wolverine message boards. I'm sure there's plenty of panic.
I still think there's just their fans are so happy they don't even care. We signed three
guys. I guarantee it.
I'm not saying they should like give up their season tickets. I'm just saying. I think it was a big deal for Sherrone Moore that they lost very few people in the transfer portal this spring. Remember I said I was going to watch that, where people looking and going, all right, this program. No, everybody came back, and almost all their recruits stayed, the ones that joined early and all that. So Michigan looks like it's in a great place. It's just a little odd to come off a national championship and only have 2 4-stars. I mean, Notre Dame has, like, what do they got, 20 guys? I mean, they got, I don't know. Notre Dame has got 20 guys, 11 4-stars committed. Michigan's got 2. Can I drum up anyone on some panic? You say Alabama, Georgia, they still got a lot of guys. Alabama's ranked 7th. All right, Ross, tell me I'm wrong.
Alabama's changed regimes.
Danny, you know what I'm going to tell you? You know the thing I hate even more than the NFL draft? Recruiting rankings in the middle of effing May.
You know what? Let's move on to the next one. Florida.
On, okay. Fine. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm trying to drum up some excitement here. All right. Forget it. Florida and Arkansas ain't doing crap either. Well,
Arkansas,
you know what?
They landed a pretty splashy walk-on receiver, right, Dan?
Oh, that's right. A former baseball player who's what? Going to be 30?
30 next year. He's 28, he turns 29 in August, I believe. So he'll be 3-0 next year as a, I don't know,
sophomore
college. I don't even know how many. Yeah, I mean, I guess he has full eligibility left. He could be 33 as a senior.
I just presume everybody always has eligibility left now.
You know,
you just keep going in perpetuity. But
I wonder what kind of NIL he's getting.
Monty Harrison plans to walk on the Arkansas football team. He's 28. He was a 4-star recruit who once committed to the Nebraska Cornhuskers as part of the class of 14.
Is that like Mike Riley was the coach then?
played for the Brewers. The Brewers drafted him. In 2020, he debuted for the Miami Marlins. He hit 170 with a homer and 6 stolen bases. Got speed. SEC speed. Loose hips. 57 career MLB at bats. He hit 176 with 2 homers. He hit 97 homers, though, in all 10 seasons of minor league. 10 seasons, and now he's going to play college. We're in a weird place. 230 stolen bases from Lee Summit, Missouri. Caught 60 passes for 13 touchdowns as a high school player. Bo Pelini signed him.
Bo Pelini, oh my gosh. Wow.
That's amazing.
Well, Arkansas's got him now. Look out.
Not the Youngstown State coach Bo Pelini or the LSU defensive coordinator. The Nebraska coach Bo Pelini.
That's 4 Man. Coaches ago.
Yeah.
Rule, Frost, Riley, Pelini.
This is like Willoughby.
Not counting interims.
Everybody wants some. My favorite college baseball movie. This guy, Willoughby, they find out he's on the team, but he find out he's already played like 6 years of college sports and he was under like an assumed name on the team. And they throw, they catch him, throw him off the team.
For Arkansas and Florida, I think I'd be a little bit more concerned than I would be at Michigan, just because that these are urgent years. And, you know, quite frankly, if Sam Pittman and Billy Napier don't win this fall, it might be moot as far as who's their recruiting for February. But, I mean, they need guys, and they need guys quickly. I saw Sam Pittman at the Derby. He was having a good time. He was there with the Mystic Dan people. They're all Arkansas guys. So I bet he cashed in big, by the way, on the Derby. But hopefully he cashes in on the recruiting trail as well, because it's fun having Sam Pittman around.
Yeah, I don't know that any other programs in the SEC, any other head coaches are more on a hot seat than those two, Billy Napier and Sam Pittman, Arkansas and Florida. Yeah, a little more dire straits, you might say. A little more panic button, Dan.
Yeah, than, I think Michigan will be all right. Michigan will be all right. But, hey, I'm just trying to. I'm a vulture, media vulture.
Yeah, you're trying to drum up drama. It's typical media.
Typical media.
Look at you. In mid-May.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you this, Ross. In mid-May, I have already acclaimed this assignment for Yahoo Sports next bowl season. I will be covering the Gin and Juice Bowl.
Oh, there we go.
Snoop Dogg is now sponsoring a bowl. The Arizona Bowl will now be known as the Gin and Juice Bowl, of course, from his classic song, Gin and Juice. And because Dre, him and Dr. Dre have a line of gin-based cocktails, Gin and Juice. Really amazing it took this long for this to come out. We should have thought of this a long time ago. Did more for the gin industry than anybody. So Snoop Dogg is presenting the Gin and Juice Bowl. How excited are we about this?
No, other way around, Dan. So it's the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice. That's the full name.
Oh, I'm sorry. You
know. So the presenting sponsor is Gin and Juice. The title sponsor is Snoop Dogg himself. It will be the first presenting or title sponsor that is an alcohol brand in bowl history. They kind of lifted. Yeah, they opened the door for this. You can bet there are going to be some, sooner or later, the Holiday Bowl presented by Coors Light is coming, something like that. You can bet. So that door's open. I heard about this when I was out in Phoenix, that the Arizona Bowl was no longer going to partner with Barstool, and that the deal was up and there was no renewal. And digging around a little bit, uncovered that, the Snoop Dogg is involved, so you can imagine that piqued my interest. He will be, Snoop Dogg will be around all week for bowl activities and such. He'll meet with the teams. I don't know if he'll hand out gift bags with potentially certain items in them that a Snoop Dogg might hand out and distribute. But he'll be around. I think he'll do a concert that week. He will be in the booth during the game. He will offer some commentating, which should be fun. I think the bowl game, which in the past, I believe, has been only streamed or partially streamed, is going to be on linear TV. They're working on a deal right now to get it on linear TV. So all of the nation will be able to watch the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop.
I have one pressing question. Will Gin and Juice be available in the press box? If so, I'm going. I'll be there with Dan to cover that one.
I haven't had a Gin and Juice yet. I heard they're pretty good.
I haven't either, frankly.
Gin canned cocktail. We got to get my... Give it a try.
It's got to be available in the press box. Got to
feel free to send us samples. Just saying. Yeah. Just saying. Snoop Dogg's unbelievable. He's in every business.
Yeah. He's a damn mogul. But he also has been involved in grassroots football forever.
Yeah.
Grasping the proper term there. Grasping.
He's a mogul. Dan.
This guy,
hey, he was acquitted, but he once stood trial for murder. Like, I mean, like, now he's like America's, like, everyone's a happy sidekick. He's like, hangs out with Martha Stewart. Of course, she did time,
America's
too.
Stoner uncle, yeah.
Martha Stewart did more time than him. Anyway, he's just, I mean, who doesn't love Snoop Dogg? It's unbelievable. What a career, what a business this guy has put together, considering where he once sat, which is at a defendant's table in a murder trial, which is, other than post-conviction, is the last place you want to be. The second worst place you can be. And he beat it. Johnny Cochran defended him. Incredible. Anyway.
Yeah. Like Pat said, you know, his youth football program, pretty astonishing numbers out of it started in L.A. I think it spread a bit around that area, but it's 60,000. I think it's 60,000 youth football players have come through there, and some of them, I think, in the NFL now, and plenty in college football.
Incredible. All right.
So he, by the way, I was hoping to get, when I got a hold of this story.
Interview?
I was really hoping to get an interview with Snoop, obviously.
We had
right?
Jimmy like, Kimmel on this show, you know, because he sponsored a bowl. We will break the no interview if we get the DOG.
Absolutely. If we get Mr. Dog.
Compton and Long Beach together.
I was hoping. Go. Instead, they sent me a statement to a few questions that I sent them, the PR, the public relations for Snoop. But in the statement, they wrote the answers in a way that Snoop would say them, right? So like some of the end of the answers was, "Ya dig," like so it was freaking great. Statement. It was awesome.
If you're Snoop Dogg's publicist, you have to speak. I once wrote a column for Yahoo Sports on the Big Three basketball. Just because I was in Vegas for a fight and they offered me a chance to meet Ice Cube. I admit it. I did it. I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I'm not going to do that interview. Big Three basketball? Sure. Very impressing concern. All right. Speaking of mind-altering, enthusiasm for mind-altering substances. I mean, I am on freaking point today with my transitions.
This
unbelievable.
Hall of Fame hosting performance.
Unbelievable
here,
work by me.
Indeed. Perfect.
Ohio State University had a commencement speaker that admitted he wrote the commencement speech while on psychedelics. This is the greatest. They had a psychedelic and used AI.
Oh, good.
Chris Pan, who is described by the school as some kind of social entrepreneur and investor and an alum. This guy would have been great. You're like, you want Chris Pan on your floor in the dorms down in Columbus because this guy knows how to get the good stuff, apparently. He shows up for the commencement speech. He's wearing bright red pants and sneakers. This is a place that's had like, you know, John Glenn and Barack Obama, and like people like that. I mean, it's Ohio State. It's Ohio State. Who would you could get some good people. You get to give a speech in the shoe in front of like 60,000 people. 17-minute speech. He starts by asking everyone to get up and do like this like mystic dance with him. He then had everyone sing parts of the 1993 What's Up by Four Non-Blondes, which is a band I haven't heard of since 1993.
Yeah.
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 Then everyone had to do a breathing exercise that the Navy SEALs use to remain calm in stressful situations. I actually think that might be good use. I don't know. Then he started talking up crypto.
Yeah, of course.
I know this might feel polarizing, but I encourage you to keep an open mind right now. I see Bitcoin as a very misunderstood asset class. The place booed at that point when they realized they weren't doing. He did a magic trick of some sort.
Wow.
And then later he had everyone try to get everyone to sing in an effort to tell people young adults can heal divisions of the world. Everyone to sing "This Little Light of Mine."
Oh my God.
Which I'm going to say, no one wants to admit it because it makes you seem soft, but "Little Light of Mine," that's a banger. That's a banger.
Not at a commencement ceremony.
I don't know. Bring everyone together. It's not.
I don't want to be singing that.
Anyway, he said he got some help from AI this week to write my commencement speech for 60,000 grads. We're in challenging times. Wanted something extra heartfelt. Tried ChatGPT, but that wasn't that good. He graduated 99 from Ohio State and got a master's degree at Harvard Business School. And he is a founder of a company that promotes meaningful conversations and positive energy. The decision to choose this guy as your commencement speaker is worse than when Ryan Day didn't go for it on 4th-and-1 at Michigan Stadium last year.
if this is the future of, you say you used AI for this speech, like if this is any indication of AI's commencement speech writing, the speechwriters of America will have no problem getting jobs in the future, because this sounds like a disaster. I actually had this story up to read later, found it this morning, and I was they're roundly getting criticized, maybe rightfully so, for this selection.
I will say, having sat through four college graduations, you want to check just a few boxes, right? You want the speaker to have a little bit of humor, a little bit of wisdom for the grads, throw out some challenges or optimism, and then get out of there. Everybody is there just to see their kids, hear their kid's name called, and see them go across the stage and get the diploma, and you try to get a picture, and then you get out. And usually it's hot, and they're wearing robes, and they don't want to be there any longer, as the graduates themselves, than the parents do, who are overdressed in the stands. So give this dude a D- and give him some more of his hallucinogenics and send him on his way.
Here's my thing about the Bitcoin part. Like, what if he's right? Like, I didn't attend my graduation.
He's a prophet here, a mad prophet?
I did not attend my graduation. I just skipped it. I didn't go.
Now that's on brand.
On brand. I just left. Yeah. When I got done with school, I left. I did not stay for graduation weekend. Some other people told me they were all hung over at it anyway. I just wanted the hell out of school.
Yeah.
So I did not attend.
Thrown up in my mouth.
So you guys did attend your graduations?
Yeah, My mom made me. I didn't want to because I could barely get out of bed. I was so hungover.
I was dazed and confused, but I was at it. I attended.
Yeah, my parents weren't even showing up. It was just, we're done. So no one asked me to go. I just left. I wasn't even in town.
Dan Wetzel just reeking of sentimentality for his college.
Really was my love of UMass was so deep that I... Am I done here now? I'm like when O.J. Mayo wanted to... No, was it Beasley? It's one of those guys. They didn't even fly home with the team. Was it Beasley after the NCAA tournament loss? They're like, I'm out of here. This is over, right? Season's over. I just wanted to be bought. That was it. No romanticism, Brian Kelly romanticism. I was gone.
No locker room culture for you.
What if at either of your graduations, someone handed you, like the guy got up there, do you remember anything they said, man or woman, whoever it was that spoke, but wouldn't you, if they were like, hey, I got an idea for you guys, buy some Apple stock. You know that, like, you're going to make like a grand and like Uncle Jerry's going to give you 50 and this, would it take all that money and buy Apple stock? You'll thank me later. This guy might be onto something. That's better than follow your passions. Do what you love. That type of crap. I think stock tips would be a great idea. This could be the class of 2024. Ohio State might be sitting back later going, freaking guy told me he was high, but he told me. I don't know what's going to happen.
You're getting stock tips from a dude who's on ayahuasca or whatever that hallucinogenic's called. I don't want them. No, thank you.
I don't know.
We got good stock tips you'd want.
Yeah.
These stock tips don't seem good, Dan.
How do you know? Nobody knows.
Isn't this Bitcoin thing, isn't this running out of steam here?
No, not really. He's saying that he can't print more of it. It's a fine. I don't want to get into stock tips around here. I'm just saying, if a guy gave me a good stock tip, that would be better than most college graduations. I think we need more graduate speakers on hallucinogenics. It's my people's court ruling. Who spoke to you two?
All right.
Obviously, you didn't follow their advice because you, all these years later, you're sitting here on this craptastic podcast with me. So life did not turn out as it was supposed to.
They didn't. Yeah. I don't remember. I don't even remember who our speaker was.
I only did the journalism school graduation, and it was a guy who was like on, he was an investigative journalist who was on one of the shows on ABC or something back in the day.
Yeah.
He was good. He was all right.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name. But
yeah.
You know.
I was home, tacking the world. I didn't have time for them. Frivolity.
You're still attacking it.
Look what has got me.
55 years later.
Maybe I should have stayed 55 years.
I wonder if you'd pick up on that. I just wondered if that would get
back in the class of 62. Dan graduated. Yeah, it was Vietnam protests on campus back then. Yeah. All right. That's our show. We'll be back next week with something. Who knows? Please continue to subscribe, share us on social media, and tell your friends about us. We will talk to you.